Welcome to the Brave Parenting Podcast, an examination of the Bible and how parents can apply God's word to raising children in a culture saturated with media and technology. I am your host, the founder of Brave Parenting, Kelly Newcomb. Well, hey there, everyone. Thank you for joining me here on the podcast. I hope everyone is having a fabulous week. So today we're going to walk through what kind of online media and technology that Brave Parenting recommends and approves for kids under the age of 12 to use. Last week, I shared what technology that we, my husband and I, as adults, that we use, that we appreciate, and really try and steward for the glory of God. The idea, of course, is to demonstrate that we're not completely anti-technology, we're not tech-averse. We really believe that all the technological advancements that we get to take advantage of today, that it's a gift from God, and we try to be wise and steward our use of those technologies for the advancement of God's kingdom. But I was very clear that what we use is for adults, and it's very different when it comes to children. Everything changes when it comes to kids. And if we're honest, I think even young adults to some extent, right? They cannot engage with online media and technology the same way that grown, educated adults can without detrimental consequences. And so much of that has to do with just the sheer physiological development of a human brain and the physical body. You know, much of it is about emotional maturity, life experience, even worldview training and spiritual discernment, all things that children and the really young adults like 18 to 21, 22, they just simply don't have. But if we want children to develop in those areas of life experience, emotional maturity, spiritual discernment, then we have to delay and limit their access to these adult technologies that are simply taking captive all of these healthy and natural ways of developing these skills. So plain and simple, we know this, but I'm just going to reiterate it. These technological tools, the whole Internet of Things, the always available everywhere with very little effort type of entertainment, they're made for adults. But we know that even with adults, these technologies have potential snares and detriments. So when it comes to children, of course, we've got to recognize that if it's a dangerous thing for adults, for some adults, then it is going to be definitely dangerous and detrimental for children. Companies like Meta, like Roblox, you know, they can tout all day long that they care about kids, they care about child safety, but the proof of their claims is really evident in their product, right? Instagram is not a product that is safe, appropriate, I would argue necessary and beneficial for children, like 13-year-olds, even though they can get on the platform. There is very little benefit. And that's pretty well understood concept by now, I would generally think, especially when we consider that these tools, these tech execs are not allowing their own children to use the tools that they are creating. They are simply just trying to capture children when they are young to have lifelong customers. So all that to say, again, we are not trying to raise kids to be Luddites or just have zero technology, right? Although I guess you could, and it wouldn't probably be the end of the world. They'd probably be okay. But we can be good stewards in discerning of what kind of media technology that they are engaging with that not only kind of protects them, but it also promotes healthy development, but allows them to be relevant with the technological developments that are going on today. We know Proverbs 22:6 tells us to raise up a child in the way they should go. If we want children who are not addicted to pornography, who aren't anxious at the idea of making social small talk, who's if we don't want them to have lives that are like curated experiences for public posting and public validation, then if we don't want that for them, then we have to restrict and delay and limit access to their online media and technology when they are young, because we want them to grow up knowing that their worth is found in Jesus Christ. We want them to develop wisdom and godly character, such as self-control, honesty, and patience. And to do that, we must protect their childhood from the online technologies that truly seek to enslave them. So we've been developing this list for quite a while, things that we've just been researching and trying to gather up trusted resources that we can share with you that are appropriate uses of tech for young children. Now, some of these recommendations are very specific products, but some of them are just more boundary orientated. It doesn't mean that you have to use a certain product, right? There may be similar products out there that I might not be recommending, but these are ones that we have researched or we've already tested and tried out, and we trust them to be, you know, a good, healthy alternative type of engagement with media and technology for your kids. So if you still desire for your child to engage with something else, if you have questions, of course, we are happy to research anything that you have maybe considered and that we've never talked about. So reach out to us at podcast@braveparenting.net, and we would be happy to do that. Okay, so the categories that we have that we're going to go over, that's approved technology for children under 12, we're going to talk entertainment, we're going to talk about some tools, education, communication, camera and video, and music. Now, again, we believe these are appropriate technologies for children under 12. I know there can be some pretty mature 10 to 12-year-olds, but maturity doesn't necessarily mean their innocence isn't worth protecting. There's never a regret for delaying and limiting even longer, but there is almost always a regret for allowing too much too soon. So I do generally say hold fast on these really until the age of 12. And then at the end of this list, I will go through some things for kids ages 12 to 16. Now, in general, these approved options, I'm just going to state this up front, is going to fall under five key rules. And you can apply these five key rules to pretty much anything that you are allowing for your kids. Number one, no personal handheld devices. Number two, offline first. Three, communal spaces. Four, parents present. And five, purpose driven. So we'll get into that as we go along. And then I'll kind of wrap up with reiterating that and why those five rules exist. Okay, so let's kick off this list with entertainment. Now, the technology that we would approve for entertainment with children under 12 is going to be on a television. That television should always be in a communal area of the home, such as a family room. And of course, they can watch shows or movies, documentaries. They should be age and content appropriate. That, of course, is up to you as the parent to decide what is age and content appropriate for your child. And as much as possible, it should be co-viewed, meaning with other siblings or even with a parent, if possible, that's great. Even if that content is going to require maybe some conversation, then especially in those situations, I would highly encourage you to co-view anything that you've not already seen before, or it could potentially have some touchy topics that might need some explanation. Encourage you to utilize those DVD players. You can still buy DVD players, and your local library likely has DVDs that you can borrow for free, and you can kind of keep the content fresh. Let the kids pick out a DVD each week. It's a great option, and you don't have those autoplay features, and you just don't have that streaming sense that you can easily skip on to something else and autoplay, all that. Now, if you are going to use streaming services, of course, you would want to allow for age and content restrictions on that streaming service. You can check out our guide to Christian and faith-based streaming services on our website, braveparenting.net, for more information on all these. Some of these platforms don't have any sort of age or content restrictions. They might have a family or kids section that you can go to, but the kids can easily jump to, say, an adult-like movie. But again, even those adult-like movies on these Christian and faith-based streaming services are not nearly the same as watching an adult movie on Netflix. So consider all of that when you're using a streaming service. Generally speaking, kids should not be using streaming platforms like Netflix or Hulu without any parental supervision. There are some streaming services, you know, like Minnow, that you can get pretty good faith-based content that kids could navigate on their own. maybe even Disney Plus potentially, but I would always, always, always use those parental controls to block out anything that you don't want. So I just want to be clear. That's kind of like the entertainment section. That's how children under 12 should be getting their entertainment from. It should never be on a personal handheld device because these personal handheld devices are inherently isolating. And that is a terrible habit to begin as a child, to be alone consuming content, right? Not to mention just the physiological consequences of kind of their necks craned over a screen, their eyes absorbing so much blue light. And so I know that there are, of course, situations that might warrant occasional exceptions, such as travel, you know, but there are also books to read and coloring, right? There's things that have kept kids occupied for decades before there was personal handheld screens. I mean, I just recently read Little House on the Prairie, and I'm like, wow, kids really did this back in the day. They traveled across the country in a wagon, right? And I thought, humans are amazingly resistant, right? Our children don't have to have a screen, right? Just because they can doesn't mean that we should always allow it. They can actually find other things to entertain themselves, and we can give them other alternatives as well. So when it comes to entertainment, you should always be present. It should be basically in view. You can see where they're at viewing it. It should be in view of other people, where you're in the room, and that you can basically invite conversation in them. Okay, now let's talk about entertainment in the source of gaming. Now, yes, we do approve of some types of video games under the age of 12, but it is with strict limitations. And these limitations are very similar to the television and movie-based entertainment kind of restrictions, always in a communal area of the home. So that generally means that it's played maybe on a game console through the television or maybe a computer that's in a public area in the presence of others. Again, in view, in the room with you. It should be offline, always offline. No child under the age of 12 should be playing games online. Preferably, they should be or could be, right, co-playing with others, whether it be siblings or friends in the same room. That's even better. Now you're thinking, well, what kind of games is that even? Does it even include? Well, if you have a Nintendo Switch, even the newest Switch, this is actually a great console for offline games. The games such as Mario Kart, Super Smash Bros., or Super Mario Party, those can all be played offline and with other players in the same room, and you don't have all of those addictive algorithms and sort of virtual rewards all playing into that. On a PC, if you had a home computer, you can play Minecraft Java Edition. That is the one Minecraft that we recommend. It is offline, specifically on a home PC. You can check out our guide to Minecraft to get all of the specifications on what we recommend for playing Minecraft offline. And whether you're playing on any console like an Xbox, PlayStation, Nintendo Switch, or even PC, these are the type of games that you can play offline that have been really enjoyable for years for many people. And those would include the Lego series games, whether that be like Lego Star Wars, Lego Marvel, Lego Harry Potter. Those can all be played offline. Games like Terraria, Overcooked. I have some friends who play Overcooked with their kids. I think there's Overcooked 2 now. It's like everybody's kind of all playing together in this kitchen. I've not played it, but I heard it's fun to do as a family. Moving Out, also offline game. A Human Fall Flat, another game that people recommend to be played as a family offline. And Super Bomberman, which I did not know what that was, but my husband said that he played that as a young child and was super fun. Again, offline games. And then these are available to like download from like the Microsoft Store or wherever that you can then download them and play them offline from your game console. Now, another good option that is available, you can get on Amazon, is something that's like the Wii. It's called Nex, N-E-X Playground. And so it, like the Wii, encourages a lot of body movement and multiplayer fun. You're kind of jumping around, dancing, doing different kind of sporty type of activities. and it just connects straight to your television. And so that is another option as well. If you have a Wii, you know, those still work. If you have an old one, I know they're not selling any new games for that, but those, again, can be offline fun video games for kids. Now, I will just add that in general, it probably is just easier to not allow any video games. But if you are willing to do the work up front to go online, download games, and then turn your console offline, make sure that you've got all the restrictions set up, make sure that it's in an open space in the home. If you're willing to do all that work, you can allow games without accepting all of the dangers that come along with online video games that are prevalent today. And so, especially if you're a father and you're like, well, I really like video games. I really want to play video games with my kids. Great. But keep it offline and try and follow these sort of options of games to make sure that they're not falling into addictive content. All right, let's move on from entertainment to tools. I'm going to say that these tools are kind of like a mix between entertainment and education. I like to think of them as education, but I know that ultimately for kids, they kind of see it more as entertainment. And so actually it's a win-win. And the first one in this category I'm going to say is the Tony Box. Now, a Tony Box is a screen-free interactive audio player for kids. It plays stories and songs and other type of content. When you place this magnetic figurine, which they call a Tony, on top of the actual audio player, which is like this soft fabric covered cube. We have a Tony Box at our house that our granddaughter uses. She absolutely loves it. So she got it for her 6th birthday. So she actually kind of got it late because a lot of kids will get it when they're like toddlers, like maybe 3 or so. But she loves it. She probably uses it every single day. She's 7.5 now. I think she's probably used it every single day since she's got it. Her favorite Tony at the current moment is Charlie and the Chocolate Factory by Roald Dahl. These Tonys that you put on that box, they are kind of pricey. They're like $15 to $20 a piece. The box itself is about $100. I don't think that it's unreasonable. She at least uses these over and over and over again. So the longevity we're kind of getting out of them, and then I rationalize in my mind that grandkid after grandkid can maybe continue to use these. But again, it's a good gift. Like $15-$20 is a great gift for aunts and uncles and maybe family members who are not going to spend that much money, but they're like, hey, we want to get your child a gift. Hey, I think that this is a great option. The only downside, and it isn't really one that affects me too much, is I know that the company who produces these Tonys are a little bit woke. You know, they have some pride-themed Tonys. You know, more than anything, I think it's a dangerous ideology to be teaching children when these Tonys are available for young toddlers. I mean, but my granddaughter doesn't even know that those Tonys exist, that they're available. I just see them on the app when I'm there, maybe choosing a Tony that or looking for new Tonys or something. I'm just reminded, you know, of course, that all content that comes inside these Tonys, if it's not like a straight audiobook like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory is, then I need to preview that content because the company themselves holds different values and beliefs than I do. And so that's okay. I'm willing to do that work up front because overall it is a good product. And one that is similar, but a little bit different, is Sherwood Kids. Now, I don't have a Sherwood Kids account, but it is a cross sort of between the education entertainment content, similar to the Tony Box, but it does have actual like videos, movies, kind of cartoon type of content. So it does require a screen. Sherwood Kids is a subscription-based streaming platform and app that offers curated library of audiobooks, ebooks, read-along stories, and what they say is low stimulation shows for children ranging from pre-K to 12th grade. So that's a huge range. They claim to focus on providing wholesome character-building content to foster reading skills, critical thinking, and imagination. There is no ads. There's no sort of fast-paced garbage type of content like I would classify like SpongeBob. And you do have to sign up, obviously, for a subscription. It's the only way that you can view their content. They don't have anything that they offer for free. But if you do sign up for a yearly subscription, you get a free Sherwood Bluetooth speaker that enables your child to listen to the Sherwood audio options. So I do like that. I just haven't got that subscription to actually try it out. And I haven't talked to many parents who have, but I like the concept. I like what it is that they say that they're offering. I think in my mind, the best case scenario for Sherwood Kids is maybe when you've realized you've allowed too much too soon and you really want a better alternative for your kids who are maybe used to having screen time on a regular basis. You can use Sherwood Kids content as a way to sort of wean them off or at least just give them better, low stimulation, character developing type of content. I would never allow the app to be on that personal handheld device. However, right under 12, there should be no personal handheld devices. And so even though it's an app, I would recommend that you only use it on through the TV, right? If you get that subscription and you download the app, use an Apple TV, use a Chromecast device in order to cast that to your television so that the children are watching it in a common and shared space, right? Even better when it's with you and you can kind of share and talk about that content together. And now if we move into tools that are strictly educational, I'm going to start with the Kindle Paperwhite e-reader specifically. So now ideally, paper books are going to be best. But as your kid gets older, you know, based on their reading habits or maybe your family situation, an e-reader may be appropriate. Now, not just any Kindle is going to be okay for young kids. It really must be the Kindle Paperwhite specifically because it's made for reading, right? It has a soft light and a glare-free screen that reads like paper. You know, another benefit, it has a long battery life. So if your kid forgets to charge it, or it will last on long trips. Now, of course, parents will need to download the books themselves, you know, to the device before your child can read it. But, you know, if you're a Kindle user, obviously that's a piece of cake. Even if you're not, very small learning curve there. So if your child is just a ferocious reader and you can't possibly keep up buying enough books or get into your local library to borrow those books, an e-reader may be appropriate for that, for your kiddo. But again, Kindle Paperwhite e-reader only. The other option would be MP3 audiobooks. Now, public libraries have these available. They're usually called like playaways. And you can also, from your public library, you can rent audiobooks on CD if you have a CD player. It's a great option for kids to listen to audiobooks that way as well. I think audiobooks are really the only circumstance that I would recommend that children are wearing headphones. In general, I think that headphones are a bad idea for kids because they are inherently isolating. You're literally casting out the rest of the world and all the conversation going on around them and being immersed. Now, if they're doing that for a book, I think that that is acceptable. But when we consider just the teen culture with AirPods and how they just never take them out of their ears, and it's pretty much always music, but it can be other stuff as well. It's just not a habit that you want to start off young, like where your 7-year-old always has headphones in, they're always listening to music, and they're never listening to you. But if listening to audiobooks while they read along or while you're on a long drive or traveling, headphones are obviously the way to go, and I think that's an acceptable use case for that. Another option in the technology educational tool kind of category is Scratch Desktop. Now, you may have never heard about this. For those unfamiliar, it's not a necessary tool, but it is an offline option for children to learn how to code, right? There's a huge push for kids to go into STEM, into computer programming, into coding. Yes, AI can do code, but the world is still going to need people who know how to use AI and who know how to code. They're going to need both. So if that's something your child may be interested in, Scratch Desktop is what it's called. It allows users to create and save interactive stories or games or animations using this visual block-based programming language. Again, all of it can be done without an internet connection through an app that's available for your Windows computer, Mac OS, or Chrome OS on the Chromebooks. And so the coding portion, it kind of works like this, right? So instead of typing real code like you would maybe as a more mature adult who's been trained in this, you drag and drop colorful puzzle piece-like blocks that kind of snap together to create scripts. So it's really easy for kids to learn how to begin to use code to actually create something of value. Now, the app can connect online where users can share their finished projects with the, quote, online Scratch community, but that's exactly what we don't want our young kids to do. Let them learn how to code if they want to do this, practice it, create something, and then show the family, right? We don't want them going online seeking validation or even like just dealing with the public judgment of what they've shared online. It just fundamentally alters the motivation for creating when you can like share it online and try and like gain some sort of viral popularity or just all the accolades that the world can give. It just becomes about seeking the world's approval. And so we don't want that. So you can use this application offline, you know, share it with family. It's a great way if you have someone who's really kind of STEM orientated or wants to be learn how to code. It's a great offline way to do that. Another educational tool option is Lego Education Kits. Now, these are hands-on educational sets that integrate the actual like physical Lego bricks with technology, software, and curriculum-aligned lessons to teach students science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. So I included this in the list because I think it's a real tangible way to take something that your kids may love, such as Legos, and incorporate robotic and programming-like technology. I think this is a great option for homeschool families. And the kits have like a teacher portal with these ready-to-use lessons. They've done all the work for you, which kind of you're kind of paying for. But they give you facilitation guides and instructional videos. So for example, and you know, they offer these, of course, to public schools as well. But say you had a third grader, you could buy one of the science Lego education kits for grades 3 through 5. It costs about $400 and includes 40 lessons. So theoretically, I mean, it might last you third and fourth grade, depending on how many lessons you do. It could last a while. And the kids don't actually have to use the computer or the internet to complete the lesson. Now, I will say that the lessons, if this matters to you, they are aligned with the Next Generation Science Standards, the NGSS, which is kind of like Common Core standards that they use in the public school system. I think they're recognized by most states. There may be some criticism to be made with these standards, but I just don't think it's a deal breaker. But they do market themselves to be used in a lot of public schools. But I think it's a great option if your child really loves science and wants and you want to do some hands-on STEM-related type of lessons and they like Legos. I just think it's a great option. Now, they also offer Lego Education Spike. Now, there's Spike Essential and Spike Prime. And these are robotic and programming kits for kids. Now, the Spike Essentials is for grades 1 through 5. So you could really start them pretty young. And the Prime, Spike Prime, is geared towards grades 6 to 8. So for the younger kiddos, the Essentials is $330. And it says that it includes 100 plus hours of learning. The Prime set for the older kiddos is about $400. It includes a lot more advanced type of robotics, and that is about 50 plus hours of learning. So those kits come with the bricks itself, the motors, the sensors, the hub, and then the parent teacher. All of that equipping is also given to them as well, all in this kit. Now, both Spike kits utilize programming such as the Scratch, which we just talked about, the drag and drop type of coding. That's what you would use. So again, it's still offline, even though they're learning how to program these sort of robotic Legos that they're building, whereas the older kids would use text-based programming on Python. But again, even Python is offline. So again, if you have kids who are interested in robotics, in STEM, in coding, great options here for offline use. And in this last My last option here in this tools category, I'm just going to throw this out there because I don't think that parents think about this as an option, but Microsoft Office. If you're a PC or even if you're a Mac user or whatever, you can use what programs you would have on there. But we know Microsoft applications, right? They're the simple, like they're the Word, Excel, PowerPoint. And I include these because, you know, parents who are truly trying to delay and limit their child's access to media and technology, they often will kind of panic and say, oh, my kids are going to be left behind. You know, they're going to be unsuccessful in this world if they don't know how to use all these programs and how to use computers and all that. I especially have a lot of private school parents who are concerned about this. The private school maybe is completely tech-free until high school, and then the kids don't know how to type. They don't know how to use Word when they do have to. And so I hear this argument a lot. But I think you can easily disconnect your family computer from the Wi-Fi, right? You could open up Microsoft Word or PowerPoint or Excel. Maybe you show your kids some of the basics on how to do it, and then you sort of set them loose. Because if the computer's online, they can't jump over to YouTube and just try and do something else, but give them an actual project. Maybe they can type a letter, right? Typing is still a very valuable skill that they need to know. Maybe they could create a PowerPoint presentation for something that they're interested in. I know that there's like a trend going around for kids creating PowerPoints of maybe their birthday wish list or something that they really want, a persuasive PowerPoint to convince your parents of something. Or you could put them on Excel and they could take an inventory of their toys or something like that. I think a lot of parents feel like these programs are supposed to be taught in the school system. And while they can be in sort of like tech apps kind of classes, they really are made to be intuitive enough that they can learn on their own, right? Even better, do something together with them to help them teach these very basic tools that are still going to be necessary as they continue on in their education. So I just want to, I guess, maybe also throw out there, just because my husband is a computer science teacher at a private school where kids don't use computers before high school, typing really still is important. And if your child's school does not offer some sort of typing class, I really would recommend looking into that. Maybe it's a summer type of project where they're learning how to type. There is offline programs that you can download to your computer. Some of them might be a little bit gamified, but again, it's offline. If you go online, again, there's lots of keyboard lessons, but they're super, super gamified. And again, once you're online, it's easy to jump over to YouTube. But I would encourage you, and again, if you don't want your kids left behind in the sense of technology, teaching them how to type appropriately, right? Fingers in the right spaces, using it in the traditional way is a great way to keep them up to speed. Okay, so that's kind of my educational section. Just a note, I know all these educational options are not for everyone, but they do prove that there are many, many ways to engage with advancing technologies in an educational way, but in an environment that's not distracting or where temptation is not just looming over them to just switch activities into something more exciting. When it comes to education and technology, again, remember, it's always offline. There should be no accounts, no public sharing on any of that. All right, let's move on to the communication category. First one, I'm just going to mention, you already know they exist, but let's not forget about them, walkie-talkies. It's the old school throwback that still works. Kids still love it, especially if you've got some siblings that are close in age or you've got some neighbor friends that they're close by. This is a great way to communicate in a fun way without phones. Okay, now I'm also going to recommend, of course, a home phone or a landline. Now, we've been a big proponent of this over the last several years, and we actually started to do some research to see if we could develop our own product because we were so desperate to be able to offer some sort of like internet-connected home phone that was not a smartphone to families. And man, I am so excited to tell you about this option. We just purchased landline home phones through Tin Can. It's just awesome. This company is awesome. I'm so thankful for these men, their fathers who created this product because it's so needed. It's exactly what we were trying to create and they've already done it. So we know, right, that kids crave communication. They crave connection with their friends and family. And that's why they end up getting online and playing games and doing all that. These home phone landlines, right? These are what we had as kids growing up pre-internet, right? In the 1900s. The Tin Can phone has a classic flashback option. And it's just like your standard like corded phone. It's not like a rotary, you know, it does have the buttons, but it's just super classic. It plugs directly into your internet router or in-wall Ethernet port or extender. There is an app that you can use to allow certain contacts, and then you can also allow certain talking times. Love that. So you can still put some restrictions on this. So we have two Flashback phones. We have one in our house, and then our daughter, who is the mother of our granddaughter, who lives with us during the week, has one as well, so that they can communicate. And so the two Flashback phones can call one another without a subscription. They call one another for free. It's awesome. Now, you can get a Wi-Fi connected phone if you don't have a place in your house that is very convenient in order to plug a phone directly into the internet router. So you can get the internet connected phone. That one does cost $10 a month subscription. And it looks a little bit more like a tin can. I think it's probably a little bit more hipper, but it still has like the classic cord and the phone base. And now if, for example, the Flashback phone, if I do want to enable my granddaughter to call me on my cell phone, on my iPhone, I can pay that $10 a month subscription and then program my phone number as an applicable number that she can use, right? Because it's not going from Flashback phone to Flashback phone. So you can still pay the subscription and get that. But again, if you have a handful of friends that your kids, you know and are engaging with, and these families are also doing the delay and limit model when it comes to smartphones, this is awesome. I think you get a discount the more that you buy. So you can all go in together. You can get these phones. Your kids can talk to each other. They can coordinate play dates or whatever. They can have that connection without being on the internet through a video game, exposing themselves to like all kind of algorithms and other dangerous content. So love that option. Make sure you check out our link in the show notes. Another option, and we've talked about this a lot before, it is the kid-safe home smartphone. Now, if the tin can isn't an option, you know, for you, you can get a kid-safe phone, such as Pinwheel is kind of our recommended go-to. And I think that's a great option, especially because the phone can continue to be used as they get older in different ways. And so the phone allows you to pretty much lock down any and every unnecessary app that you don't want them accessing. You can limit the contacts to only be a handful of people. You can ensure, right, that the device doesn't leave the specific area of a home. The idea is to make it like a home phone landline where it just kind of sits in one spot. You might be able to enable them to text, so that could be beneficial if some of their friends have phones and that text, but your child does not. So it just depends on the age of the child. Of course, just remember those home smartphones never, never go behind closed doors, right? They should always be used in public spaces. You can check out our podcast that we've done on the home smartphone to learn more about that. When it comes to smartwatches, that can be an option for communication as well. But again, I think it should be rare and really a specific need or niche kind of reason why you're having to use that smartwatch. So the one that we would recommend the most is the Gab smartwatch. We have tested several of them, researched many of them. I think Gab still, in my opinion, is probably one of the best ones. Now, most children in general will not need a smartwatch, especially when they're young in elementary school and whatnot. It introduces this personal technology, the idea that I can have a screen, even if it's really small, right, and be distracted by it, to have something to look at. And when you allow that too early, that can just be, it just sets them on a trajectory of loving technology too much. So I think some examples where this may be appropriate is maybe if your child does come home alone and maybe they're spending an hour or so by themselves and the parents want to know, be able to call and say, hey, I made it home or whatever, or hey, I'm going to be home late. Right. We know this can happen a lot of times. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with an 8 or 9 year old being home alone for an hour or so. It's not child endangerment, y'all. Right. It happened for decades. I'm absolutely certain I was left home alone with a landline when I was a kid. Right. But nevertheless, I think that if your child is kind of between that age of like 9 and 12, maybe they're really involved in an athletic sport where they're maybe there for a couple hours and you're leaving them there, This could also be a good option in case practice ends early, in case you're running late. If you do need to communicate, you can set those watches up to only communicate with the parents. And so that can be a good option as well. But again, it should be rare. Okay, so that's the communication option. So lots of good options there to keep kids in communication, not only with you, but with one another, which is really what we want. Now let's move on to the camera and video category. So a couple options, because kids want to take pictures, right? We're all so obsessed with pictures, especially parents. And so kids want to do the same thing, but we don't want to give them a smartphone or a device to be able to take the pictures, because then that just opens up, obviously, everything else that's on the device. So here are some options. There's the Polaroid Go phone camera, or there's the Fujifilm Instamax. They're pretty similar, right? The Polaroid Go, it's about $90, and the film is kind of expensive. I think it's about $21 for 16 pictures. But I do think it is a good, it's a fun option, especially for elementary kids, even especially girls, because it really forces them a little bit of patience to like wait for that film to develop. It gives them an immediate tangible product to appreciate when the picture does develop. They can't sort of overpose or keep retaking the picture like you could on a phone or a digital camera. So it really, it forces them to embrace the imperfection of the moment, which I love. And the same is true for the Fujifilm Instamax. Same concept, a little bit cheaper. I think the base itself is about $65. The film, last time I looked, was $17 for 20 sheets. Now, either can be a good option. I think also, you know, where this is a good option, you're like, I'm not going to spend that kind of money on my kids. But if grandparents are looking for something for a birthday gift or a Christmas gift, and you know, you don't know what toys, and you don't want to say, nope, you know, please don't buy them a tablet. Please don't buy a video game console, whatever that is. These type of options are great for the parent, the grandparents or the aunts to buy kids to give as a gift. And they can enjoy them. Maybe they don't use them forever, but it can be used as a fun option for them during that season of life that they're in. Now, the camera that I really love and really recommend, has a lot of longevity here, is the Camp Snap camera. Y'all, I love this company. The Camp Snap camera, you may have seen it. I know they do a lot of advertising on social media. It has no screen. It's a point-and-shoot digital camera, but it's reusable and it's rechargeable. It takes up to 500 shots on one charge. And so it really takes the need out of kids having a phone with them to go to camp or to a birthday party or any event, frankly, where they can take the pictures that they want. There's no film to be developed or accidentally exposed. And, you know, they are only going to get so many shots. Again, it forces the development of great character traits that we are losing in this world with when all the technology is available all the time with no limit, right? So they can learn traits such as patience and accepting what is, right? While living in the moment, you took that picture and that picture just is what it is. And then you move on and you live. You're not still staring at the screen saying, oh, no, wait, I closed my eyes. Oh, I didn't like the way I look in this one, right? You just take it and you move on and keep living. So zero temptation to analyze and critique the photos. Now the camera is about $70, but again, it's digital, it's rechargeable, terrific option for kids. Again, add this to your kids' Christmas list or birthday list for grandparents to give. Great gift for that. Again, it will take a little bit of work on the parent's side. You're going to have to download the pictures, maybe sort them into files, you know, but the benefit gained compared to them having a phone, having a device or iPad where they're taking pictures and collecting all of them just to stare at them, edit them, and try and filter them to be like some level of perfection, that's unhealthy. So this is a great option. And when I went to the website, I noticed this option. And so I added it to the list just at the last minute here. It is the Camp Snap CS8 video camera. Now, I almost bought one. It, I think, ships in a couple weeks. It's on like a pre-order right now. I didn't buy one yet, but I still may because it is awesome. I think it's just one of the coolest creations, like screen-free creations there is out there. So I don't think this is specifically, you know, under 12, like kids have to have this, but it definitely fits the criteria. So I'm kind of adding it here in the category. I think it's a great option for a family purchase and kids can use it, especially in the presence of their parents and that they can really enjoy it. So here's what it is. The CS8 video camera It's this really cool, super vintage looking camera, but practical for today's need. It's a point and shoot with no playback screen. It's reusable and rechargeable, just like the CampSnap camera. It allows you you to choose your aspect ratio, and you can also choose from 5 different filters, such as like vintage and black and white. But what's great is these options aren't like digital, you know, on a digital screen. They're like on dials. There's like a little dial on the side of the camera that you can turn on. And even, I think, fun, even cooler, is there's these 2 analog meters that show you your battery life and your SD card space. Awesome. There is buttons on it for, you know, your zoom in and zoom out. And it's handheld. Like you just hold it in one hand and it has like just a simple finger trigger to start recording. So if you have a child who really just loves video or wants to learn videography, or if you're just a parent who loves to take video of your kids' performance events or just everyday life, this is an awesome option because it's distraction-free. You can embrace the imperfection. You can embrace patience. And as a parent, that's awesome. That is what you need to be demonstrating for your kids. You can capture the moment. It's right. It does not have to be perfect. It doesn't have to be, you know, filtered and edited. I mean, granted, they do offer filters on this. You can make it look cool. Again, you're going to have to download the videos to a computer. That's going to involve, obviously, parents if, you know, the kid is using this. But right now, the camera is $150. That's why I was debating buying it, because it's like super affordable when you think of a video camera compared to like a digital SLR. This is like super affordable, and all the reviews from the first shipment that they had are just raving. Everybody loves it. So I think this, again, can be a great option for a family and especially for parents to use when filming their kids instead of using their phones. Now, to go along with that, I'm going to add 2 other sort of tech options in this camera video type of category, and that is a digital photo frame. If you do get your kids such as like a CampSnap camera and they have these digital photos that they want to showcase, a digital photo frame is a great way to do that. So they can enjoy the pictures that they took every day as they kind of cycle through. I think that's an awesome option. I love the digital photo frames. And you could also get a photo printer. It's an option, you know, if they have a CampSnap camera and, you know, want to invest in sort of the photo printer and photo paper, you know, depending on their age, you know, either with your help or alone, they could print their own pictures and they can create albums and scrapbooks with it, or maybe gifts to give their friends, right? There's lots of options there. All right. So that ties up that category. Now let's talk music. This is my last category here. And of course, the first screen-free music offline option is the boombox, right? Don't discount the enjoyment of just traditional radio and CDs, especially if you still have CDs from your own childhood, right? All the music, it comes back. All the kids are wearing like Metallica and Guns N' Roses t-shirts these days. And so you even see record players that are coming back into the marketplace and becoming the thing to get. I have several high school students, young adults who have record players. And I'm like, that's so awesome. So you can still buy boomboxes in case you don't know. They have the AM, FM radio. They can play CDs. Great option. Now, if you are looking for a digital music option, the one that I think is the best through all the research that I've done is, it's called the Mighty 3. MIGHTY 3. The Mighty 3. It's a small, portable, screen-free music player that lets you listen to your synced Spotify Premium or Amazon Music playlists or even podcasts, right, offline. So you don't need a phone or an internet connection. So think of it like the iPod Shuffle back in the day. So it's very much like this, but it's updated for streaming services and Bluetooth connectivity. So the device connects wirelessly to the phone, then it will sync the music playlists, and you can even sync like headphones. We highly recommend the Bluetooth speaker option for music, unless it's like a long car ride or air travel or chores, frankly. You know, when I am actually, the only time I'll really listen to music in my headphones and not out loud is if I'm sort of doing chores. I'm just cleaning the house and I've just maybe got a podcast or music going on. If your kid wants to do that while they're doing chores, more power to them, because the more chores they do, the more music they get to listen to. And that may be a great motivator. So of course, This option does require parents to have that Spotify Premium or Amazon Music Unlimited subscription plan. But if you already have that, this is really a great option because kids can have their own playlists. They can sync it. They're listening to it offline. They don't need to have it, you know, all shared type of music lists and whatnot. So this is really a good option. We're often asked, you know, how to solve this problem of music when you're not allowing personal devices. And I think that really the Mighty 3 is probably the only and best option other than a boombox type thing. Or there is this option, and it is similar to the Tony Box and Sherwood Kids. It's a little bit different, but because it works as a Bluetooth speaker, I put it in this category. And that is the Yoto Player, Y-O-T-O Player. So this is a screen-free audio device. It's, like I said, similar to the Tony Box. It uses cards instead of figurines to play audiobooks and music and such. And there's like a pixel display that sort of helps you navigate its resources, which I actually think is nice because it's hard to know what you're doing on the Tony Box and it's hard to change the chapter that you're on in the audiobook. But this little pixel display kind of guides you a little bit more. Anyway, so you can buy music cards for this if you want your kids to be able to listen to music on there. So when I looked for the music options on their website, there were options such as The Beatles, Elton John, Bob Marley. There was the greatest hits of Queen. There was the Wicked soundtrack, Spice Girls, Kids Bop. And of course, like every younger kid type of music, nursery rhymes, songs about food, you know, all that sort of stuff for the younger ones. Nothing like super modern pop, but there is a lot of classic type of good music. I think the Beatles is a great option, you know, for the kids. The box itself, like I said, works like as a Bluetooth speaker. So theoretically, you could connect your own music to your kid's Yoto box. But of course, you know, that's going to require you to be in like Bluetooth range at all times for your kids to be able to listen to music. Another option would be to buy their blank creative cards, and they allow you to download MP3s to the card, which can then be played, you know, whenever and wherever the box is, because the box is kind of portable. So if your kids are still young, I think that the Yoto player is a great option because it does serve so many purposes. It serves that music purpose, but it also serves kind of like the Tony Box purpose as well to listen to audiobooks. So it's not just a little kid thing. I think that it can be a tween thing as well. It can kind of grow with them, be used as a Bluetooth speaker. So you're going to get a lot of longevity out of this product. The full-size Yoto player is $110. The mini is $80. The cards range in price. I mean, one book is like $12 to $14, which I think is a little bit high. If you were to buy the entire series of Roald Dahl, for example, it'd be like $60. The Chronicles of Narnia entire series, $60. So it is kind of pricey. They do have some clearance cards. I think I saw as low as $3. And if you were going to do the make your own cards, they were $30 for 10 cards. Okay, so that about covers it, right? That's the, for the kids under 12, they can still partake in entertainment. They can engage educationally with offline tools and resources, right? They're still able to take pictures. They're able to listen to music and they're able to still talk on a phone, right? All of that was what we had available to us as pre-internet kids back in the 1900s, as I like to say. And it was enough, right? It still gives kids enough time and space and range to live in the freedom that is childhood, to engage in imaginative play, you know, to read because they want to or because they're bored, you know, to think, to learn, to build cognitive skills that will be useful in every facet of life, not just cognitive, like tech savvy type of skills. So I want to reiterate our five rules, and they are, number one, no personal devices. Now, why not personal? Because it keeps kids in community and avoids isolation, where Satan loves to find them alone. Number two, offline, always offline first. Why? Because it removes the harm of infinite content, invisible strangers, and intrusive algorithms. Number three, communal spaces. Why communal? Because visibility deters secrecy and it encourages conversation among everybody who's watching. Number four, parental supervision. We should have a parent present. Why? because tech companies want to capture kids' habits and their hearts, and parents need to be aware that that is happening. And number five, purpose-driven. And why do we have to have a distinct purpose for using tech? Because tech is a tool. And when we see it as a gift from God, we can use that tool to glorify Him and advance the kingdom. So the truth of the matter is, when we apply these five rules, the independence that kids actually crave, they can get from the real world. They don't need to feel independent and have freedom by using tech devices, right? Because they look around and they see adults, and they of course want to be an adult. They want to have independence and freedom. And because every adult they see is exerting that independence and freedom, staring down at their phones, they just think that that's what they want to do. That's what they have to do. That's what being mature and adult and having freedom is. But we can give our kids different options. And it's, if the personal handheld screen time, if it's not an option, well, then they're going to choose the outside play. They're going to choose running around with their friends in the neighborhood or whatever that is. Then they're going to live that way, and they're going to be better for it when the screen is not an option. So no matter where you are with online media and tech devices in your home, I just want to encourage you that you can do a reset. You can, right? I'm going to encourage you and invite you to choose one way to upgrade and one thing to undo. Maybe you upgrade by renting a DVD from the library and you watch that instead of something streaming. Or maybe you're ready. You're like, oh my gosh, I love the tin can phone. I'm going to order one. But also choose something to undo. Maybe you put an end to the tablet that just sort of wanders around your home and goes everywhere. Or maybe you put an end to the tablet entertainment as a whole and you move all of that to the communal television in your family room, right? You can start small. I know it's hard to just undo everything at once. I'm not asking you to do that, but just be in prayer about how to do that, because all of this it's for God's glory, but it is also for the benefit of our young children. Now, I know I've been going long, but I just want to touch on real quick, what do you do between the ages of 12 and 16? Because you've heard all this and you're like, yeah, this all makes sense. Maybe, for the under 12, but what do we do when our kids are between those ages of 12 and 16, those middle school, early high school years? So let me just sort of brief you on some of what we would recommend. Brave Parenting does not recommend that a child receive any sort of phone, a smartphone, regular phone, kids safe phone, really before high school. I could list a handful of caveats as to why they may need one or have, whatever the reason may be before that. But for the most part, it just isn't a need if you're giving your kids the ability to communicate in other ways, such as a landline, such as gathering them together face to face. If they have that, then they don't necessarily need a phone that they are carrying around with them all the time. You can have a home smartphone, but they don't necessarily need that personal device on their body at all times. If you do need to have that phone available, as much as humanly possible, the goal should be to limit how much personal handheld device screen time your child has. This is true for phones, but it's also true for tablets. Just because a child, is 12 or 13, right, doesn't mean that all of a sudden they're going to get a laptop and an iPad. They can sit around and play video games and stream Netflix, right? No, we do want to move them up gradually in the content that they're allowed to use, their access to the internet, but it still doesn't mean that it has to be on a personal handheld screen. Again, because isolation is just not good for them. Right, so the ages of 12 to 16 should be a slow transition into this greater media and tech independence and allowance. Maybe you start allowing them to wear headphones so their younger siblings don't have to hear the music they're listening to. Maybe you let them stay up later and they're watching a PG-13 movie with you when their siblings are in bed or whatnot. There are a lot of transitional sort of pivot points that you can add throughout these years. It's not an all in, right? It should be a very gradual of adding these things as they mature. And of course, when it comes to social media, we've always stood firm that 16 is the earliest age ever that any child should be on a social media platform. But you know, since the years that we've really taken that stance, it's pretty obvious that even later than 16 is probably better. There isn't a major benefit, I would say even a net benefit, for most teenagers to be on social media at ages 16 and 17. You know, if through prayer and discernment and wisdom, you think that your child really does need to wait until they're 18, then by all means, I say do it. I absolutely encourage you to wait as long as possible before allowing that social media. I believe that they will be better for it. And all in all, remember that the most important thing regarding your child's use of online media and technology, no matter what their age, is your faithfulness, right? Your faithfulness as their parent to train them up in the way they should go, to teach them to love the Lord their God with all their heart, soul, mind, and strength, right? To obey His commands and to disciple them every day, you know, when you're sitting at home, walking along the road, lying down, rising up. That's Deuteronomy 6. You as the parent are to stay faithful to this so that your children will recognize, you know, by observing your own life and your own technology use, that technology is not our ultimate hope, right? Scrolling is not the way that you find rest, and that entertainment is not your source of salvation, right? That we serve a holy and mighty God that brings us that hope, that rest, and that salvation in a glorious way. And we can bring Him glory and honor through the way that we parent in this era of online media, smartphones, and AI technology when we are faithful to do the very things that God has called us to do, which is, of course, to number one, disciple our kids, not to make them happy by giving them online media and technology. Okay, friends, that was a long podcast. Thanks for sticking out with me. If you're still here, I'm so glad that you've stuck it out. If you have any questions at all, please feel free to reach out. I'm happy again to research anything that maybe I did not list, but you're like, hey, what do you think about this? I'd love that. And I'd also just love to hear your thoughts about this approved technology for children under 12. All right, friends, that's what I've got time for you today. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week. And until then, go and be brave.